The court will now hear argument in 071065, Raul Hagen versus Doris Hagen.
Anderson will present argument for the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal.
I'm Ryan Anderson. I am here on behalf of petitioner Raul Hagen. This case really has a fairly simple issue at its core that the court needs to resolve today. And the key to that is the Family Code provision, section 9.007, and whether or not the trial court modified, altered, or changed the division of property when it entered its clarification order. And the division of property that is at issue was the division of, and I'm quoting from the decree, which was entered in 1976, all Army retirement pay or military retirement pay. And what the court clarified was what eventually came before the court, and the stipulated facts provide all the facts that this court needs for this particular issue. 1992, Raul retires. Again, they were divorced in 1976. He retires in 92. In 2003, he is determined to be 100% disabled. And accordingly, he applies for and receives VA benefits. Now, there's an important distinction.
Any hint of disability before, or is this just something that happened in 2003? Or?
This was the first determination of disability that he had, yes.
So it's just a condition that developed?
A condition that came on or was finally diagnosed or determined. There is a set of procedures going through. It would be rather long for the court's time, but there's a set of, you go before a board of medical doctors and they determine what your disability is. So in 2003, he is determined to be disabled, and he elects, as he's required to, in order to receive VA benefits, he has to waive his military retirement benefits. If you get X dollars of VA benefits, you have to waive the corresponding X dollars of military retirement benefits. There's just no double dipping.
Why would you do that? Is there... What's your advantage to doing that?
Well, there are several advantages. The primary advantage, or a primary advantage, is VA disability benefits are not taxable.
That's good.
So that gets you out of taxation, which we can all appreciate. Also, you get into the VA disability benefits and into that system, you're getting other medical-related disability benefits. So it's going into that system. So he does his waiver as he's required, and his ex-wife Doris comes forward and she moves to enforce because the amount of retirement pay that had been divided under the 1976 decree was reduced by the amount that he had to waive in order to receive the VA benefits. So Doris comes forward and she moves to enforce and wants clarification. She asked the court to clarify, do these VA disability benefits, are they included in the military retirement pay that was the property that was divided back in 1976? And the trial court decided no. The Court of Appeals said, wait a minute, you cannot go back and hold that and collaterally attack that 1976 decree, which again divided the property, Army retirement pay or military retirement pay, based on subsequent federal legislation, the Uniformed Services Former Spouse Protection Act. And here's the important thing. This is the biggest problem with the Court of Appeals opinion. Raul never relied on that act. And didn't need to. That act doesn't have, while that has far-reaching effects in all sorts of cases, it has nothing to do with this case. And the reason it has nothing to do with this case is all Raul was arguing when Doris sought clarification of the 1976 decree, Raul was arguing the property that was divided back in 1976 was Army retirement pay or military retirement pay. That's it. The clarification is, does that include VA disability benefits? No. And that was decided by this court prior to the USFSPA ever being enacted, prior to the U.S. Supreme Court case, the McCarty case, that gave rise to the legislation. And I must apologize to the court because I think I gave short shrift to one of its former opinions in the Burson case. And I mention it in the case or in my briefing, but I think Justice Pope's opinion deserves a lot more consideration. And Burson was decided in 79. So it was decided prior to all of this new federal legislation coming in. And Burson came up on this court, before this court, in a habeas corpus position. And what happened there was a serviceman, a retired serviceman, had gotten divorced. The decree divided his retirement pay. And he elected to waive, you know, subsequent to being determined to be disabled, elected to waive part of the retirement pay in order to receive the VA disability benefits. And his wife said, wait a minute, you can't do that to me, and sought to, you know, get rid of, or, you know, sought to hold him in contempt, and he was jailed. And it comes up to this court, and what Justice Pope wrote, and I think this is very important, is Justice Pope wrote, no, the division of retirement benefits does not include the division of Veterans Administration benefits. VA benefits are fundamentally different. They are under a federal statutory scheme that is not based on years of service. It's not an earned property right. What VA benefits are is it is a federal gratuity in order to compensate and assist disabled former service members to readapt to society. Fundamentally different benefit. So dividing up retirement benefits does not divide up VA disabilities.
He didn't quite write that. He said, we now hold that a divorce decree cannot prohibit a person from doing that which the federal law properly gave him a right to do. Well, of course, he was entitled to do that. The question is, does the wife get part of it? It doesn't. It wasn't. The issue in Burson was not whether he could do it or not. The question was, what was the effect of it?
That was ultimately on the habeas corpus, but under subsection 3 of that opinion, Justice Pope wrote, the important fact which distinguishes this case from those cited above, which had to do with military retirement, is that Burson, after the divorce decree, made an election to forego his Air Force disability benefits and to receive instead the disability benefits from the VA. VA benefits, unlike Air Force disability retirement benefits, are not divisible or assignable. They are not property. And that is the key distinction there.
How do you square Burson and Berry?
That's a really hard question, and that's why you asked it. I think the only way that you can fairly say and square them is, I think to the extent Berry is being read as going beyond the limited issue that came up in it, it's being read too broad, and the court's writings are being misinterpreted to a wrong effect. I think Berry came up on, do you give retroactive effect to the USFSPA? Because that is what the Court of Appeals held. And I think if you read Berry to address that limited issue, then I think you can leave Berry alone. If you're reading Berry to say VA benefits cannot be divided, and that Berry actually changed the law, changed Burson, and even before that, the Ramsey opinion, which was back in 72, which was a writ dismissed case, so it wasn't this court's case, but it was some Texas law prior, then you would have to read that Berry overruled all of that. And if I think to the extent that that's what Berry is being held to, I think it's wrong. I don't think that's what Berry says. I think I say that because I've read that case, especially over the last 2 days, again and again, because the more I read Burson, the more I read, these two don't seem to square. But I think the way you square it is, in Berry, they specifically note that the Court of Appeals based its holding on retroactive application of the federal legislation. Everyone agrees that the federal legislation has no retroactive applicability. So I think that's the only way that I can square them. I am about to be out of my time just because I've reserved most of it, and I'll address it on rebuttal. The last point I would just leave the court with, I do think that this is a very limited case and very narrow, and that the issue is, did the court modify the 76 decree when it said a division of military retirement benefits does not divide VA disability benefits? And it doesn't, because they are fundamentally different. It would be like saying apples divides oranges. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. The court will now hear from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Boehm will present argument for the respondent.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Gary Boehm, and I feel like I have lived with these cases since 1976. I was a captain in the Air Force in the early 70s. I've argued military retirement issues before this honorable court on three different occasions, this being the third one coming up, against my esteemed colleague, Jim Higdon. I've even had the dubious honor of being the only attorney in the state of Texas who has argued a military retirement case before this honorable court on both sides of the issue, representing
Did you win?
I lost both times. now, the funny thing about that was I reversed the Court of Appeals in San Antonio twice. And Higdon was here before, and I can't remember which justice it was. He said, well, Mr. Higdon, the next time we see you before this court, will you be ordering the other side of the issue? And, of course, Mr. Higdon says, well, it depends who pays me. That's I'll be here. I would just like to address, this case is all about res judicata. It's very, very simple.
Let me ask you at the outset, do you agree with petitioner that a reason to elect VA benefits is because they're not taxable?
That's absolutely correct. And that is a primary reason why. And if you look at the scenario.
And how does that, the military retirement is taxable when you get it?
Yes, it's a pay. I mean, it's like any other retirement plan. Counsel's right. A lot of these issues are going to go away. We have now in place which is called CDRP, which is Combined Disability and Retired Pay. This has nothing to do with this case. But members now get both. They get both all of their disability plus all of their disposable pay. Disposable pay is what is divided by the DFAS, Defense Finance and Accounting Service, and allows the former spouse to get her share of the retirement. So a lot of these issues are going away, but they're not going away. Because there is another thing that is coming on the horizon that Higdon and I both have now started filing appeals on, and it's called CRSC, and it's combat-related disability pay. And if you have not had it yet, you will, because of all the cases coming out of Afghanistan and Iraq and that stuff. But that's not the big argument. I get right to my particular thing today. This is res judicata. This is the same issues, maybe cloaked in a little differently, than we had in 1981. One of my cases I've cited, and I guess I'm getting elderly, but is Hoover Mail versus Hoover Mail. Now, that Hoover Mail case came out when we had no military retirement. It was right after McCarty, and many of you may remember that we had, all of a sudden, we didn't have any. We had all these cases in the 70s that divided military retirement, and all of a sudden the federal government, the U.S. Supreme Court, comes out and says it's not a divisible asset. McCarty is the reason we have the UFSSPA, the Former Spouses Protection Act, Title 10 U.S. Code 1408. That's the thing that came up. That's the one that gave us the magic words disposable pay. Disposable pay is a word of art. It means different things to different things, but basically it excludes VA disability. In this case, in 1976, when these parties got divorced, they, and this case specifically says, he gets, or my client gets all 50% or 18/20, one half of 18/20 of all total pay. Contrary to clients.
Does it say total pay or retirement pay?
It says all pay. I think that's the language. It was all pay. Now, the interesting thing here is, and counsel has said that there is a distinction between VA disability pay and disposable pay. When you say gross pay, that includes VA disability pay. And I cite you to Jones versus
Jones. It says all Army retirement pay or military retirement.
That's gross pay.
Why isn't that different from disability pay?
Because it includes, all pay includes disability pay. That's the language. And if you look at Jones versus Jones, that's okay, and it's in my brief. That was the case where the parties divided gross pay. And the wife goes back, or the former spouse goes back, and sues him because he had elected to take a VA disability pay. Well, she won on that case. And the case was, well, wait a minute. You're talking about, you know, and that was a San Antonio case. And it says, but you're also, but in Gallegos, which is another case, you said that you couldn't divide up disposable pay. I mean, VA disability pay. And they said, yes, but that was a direct appeal. This case is res judicata. And, you all have a judgment that says that she gets a percentage of gross pay.
No, it says all retirement pay. Now,
I'm saying that all retirement pay is gross pay.
At the time that this judgment was entered, there were, opposing counsel says, and has pointed out in his brief, there were cases addressing VA disability and retirement, all three aspects. And this judgment simply says retirement.
What I'm saying is that the case, the word of art is total pay or gross pay. And I'm telling you that our cases and the ones that I've cited include disability pay as part of the gross pay.
But the question is, what did this judgment say? It seems to me like what we're doing is simply trying to interpret this judgment, and it says retirement pay.
It says, but if you read the cases on the definition of retired pay means gross pay, and that's what this court, this is what the third, the district courts or the courts of appeals around this state have always said, that retired pay, not disposable retired pay has a special meaning. But when a court awards an award of retired pay or gross pay, then that includes that VA disability pay. Now, you cannot impinge on that member to go out and make an application for VA disability. I can't send an order to the VA and have it paid. Those are exempt from those kind of arguments. But if I get a judgment for the unpaid portion of the military of the pay, then I can go to other accounts that this doctor has in Hawaii and levy on those accounts, or we can do other things with that particular money. I'm just asking the court to do what it's done for the last 30 years. And I'd also bring the court's attention to Baxter versus Rudel, which is a court case right out of this. It's also cited in this brief. And that was a VA disability case.
And let me ask a question. And the question comes up, is retirement pay either disability or simply retirement pay? Disability retirement or retirement pay? Is it pay?
Yes, it is.
Compensation for services rendered.
Yes, sir.
And how about VA disability? Is it pay? Compensation
for services?
They
call it
pay. Who does?
Well, I mean, the statute calls it a pay. I mean, you know, but it's non-taxable.
What statute?
I'm saying the VA statutes.
It calls it VA.
I mean, it's disability pay. Yes, it usually pays.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Does the VA statute call it disability pay?
Oh, yes. I'm telling you that it is a pay, but I'm not making the argument that this court, in some fraction, has a right, or that my clients have a right to go against this disability. I mean, this VA disability. I can't do anything. I can't prevent him from making an election to take this pay, but he does it at his peril, is what I'm saying. If you have an order that awards you a sum of all of the retirement to go back in, and if you make this election, and remember, he made this 30 years after this divorce decree, and this woman, my client's 83 years of age, and you can imagine the impact it has on her monies for this, you know, for this period of time. To allow him to go back and take this economic advantage, because now not only does he not have to pay his former spouse any portion of his retired pay, but he gets it tax-free. A case in mind that I've got coming up on this very, in this CDRSC, this combat-related pay, is the same deal. My client, in that case, was getting $2,000 a month for a full colonel's part of her, that pay. He waives his pay to take this combat-related disability pay. Her pay goes from $2,000 a month to $200 a month. She has to sell her house and move in with her mother in North Carolina. Now, I think courts have to be fair. We have to apply the law, but there's got to be some equities in these things.
How do you reconcile Barry and Bruce?
Well, I'm saying that Barry is a case of res judicata. I'm saying it's res judicata. Now, what is collaterally attacked? What can you collaterally attack? You can collaterally attack a void judgment, but you can't collaterally attack a voidable judgment.
But Burson is just like this.
Well, so is Barry.
So what's the answer to Willett's question?
Well, I'm saying that those were direct appeals, too. I believe Burson was a direct appeal and not a...
Well, Burson's a habeas.
Well, I mean, but it's still, all right. But at any rate, I'm saying that we don't, you know, if we go back, if you look at the language in Baxter versus Rudel, which is a Supreme Court case, 19 out of Texas here, 1990. This is after Burson, and this is after Mitchell and all those other VA cases. But I'm saying it talks about res judicata, and that's the issue. It may be avoidable case. It may have been that the court made a mistake when they made that judgment, but they made that judgment, and the respondent or the
you lost me on that. The court may have made a mistake.
It may have been voidable. I'm saying it may have been a voidable judgment.
Are you talking about the judgment in this case?
No, I'm talking. Well, yes, it could be any case that's where res judicata is involved. 1976 case. I'm talking about Baxter versus Rudel is what I'm talking about. Okay.
But I take the petitioner's position to be sure it's res judicata. It just doesn't include VA benefits.
No, but I'm saying that we're saying that it includes all benefits and includes all of the, by the very definition of it. And all these cases are involving VA disability. I mean, this court's ruled on this umpteen times since 1970 or 1981. And I'm saying that in Baxter versus Rudel, I've never seen it set aside.
What case says all retirement benefits includes VA benefits?
I'm going to say Jones versus Jones will say that. And it'll cite back to those cases that indicate that. I'd also look at the language in the tracing language in the Hoover Mail case, because it was cited in the Baxter versus Rudel case, and that was where we were. It was a contempt case, but it involved all retirement pay. It went through a panel court in San Antonio. Judge Peoples was the judge in the case, and I think it's like I said, it was decided in Baxter versus Rudel. But again, we're contending that this is a collateral attack on a final judgment, and we do think it's not permissible, and my client should be allowed to leave or have this case go back to the state court and get what relief she's entitled to.
Counsel, let me ask a question.
Yes, sir.
Can the government simply suspend and cut off the retirement pay, either disability or regular retirement pay?
I don't understand the question.
Does the government have an obligation to continue that pay, or can it just, is it a gratuity? Is it pay at the convenience of the government?
No, sir. I think once he qualifies for it and he's entitled to it.
How about disability, the VA disability?
I'm not sure that if a guy would come back. I mean, there are different types of VA disability. For example, a guy could be on temporary disability retired list where that might be subject to review. I'm assuming, and I don't have any knowledge of that, but I'm assuming once there's a final award, it is a final award unless there was some fraud or something that was...
But we don't know that one. Your position is...
No, and I'm not saying, and there's a bunch of cases. I mean, we're not saying that this member could not go out and do that. This court, the trial court, can't go order him to pay her anything on the disability, but the court can order her, order him to pay her X number of dollars out of other funds or whatever. And that's our argument.
What's the dollar difference in what your client receives?
It was there for a while. It was down to just almost 60% less. Now it's gone back
what
up.
What does that translate to in dollars?
Well, it was $30,000 is what we've sued for. That was the differential. Now, what is interesting in this case is that subsequent in 2004, federal government came out with a CDRP, with Combined Disability and Retired Pay. And they did it for the reason that in private accounts, in the private business, you had a right to have both VA disability or disability plus your retirement plan. Why should you have to give up part of your retirement plan to get the disability? So they allowed a member to do both, to get both of those. When they did that, the disposable retired pay, which is the part that the former spouse gets, basically stayed the same. And it will. They're factoring that in 2014 it'll be 100% across the board. So some of these issues are going away, except, as I previously mentioned, into this combat-related disability pay, which is a totally different issue. That's it.
Thank you.
What about the equities, Mr. Anderson? I mean, I know your client's disability was not voluntary, but it does look like he's getting more money. He makes an option. He gets more money. His former spouse gets less.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And there is – that's just the facts of the case. And there's nothing – There are no indications. Now, granted, this is a very thin record, and that's why I think the issue before this court is so narrow, that there is no indication that this was done in bad faith or in malice or anything. He's disabled. A medical board found him disabled. And in order to receive these VA benefits, he is required to waive it. Once you enter into that, you can't do anything. And, you know, as far as the equity of the situation is concerned, I think there are two points to bring up. One is this court recently pointed out in the insurance coverage case from the car wreck. You know, bad facts make bad law. It's what we always hear. And while certainly we're all here to ultimately do justice, I think we have to be very careful about how we go about it, especially this court, where your pronunciations on the law are a stone that sets forth ripples that affect everything else. And I think that's why this particular case is a very, very narrow case. There may be something else, and the court hasn't asked about this, but if you look at what other states are doing, courts recognize that this can have an adverse impact on the former spouse. Courts aren't immune to it. But that is an issue that hasn't really been developed in this case, and so I don't think there's anything, as the appellate attorney, I couldn't really argue the equities of this. Other
but
than the
it
only
seems
equity.
To me that if the parties thought about this ahead of time, as clearly as the issue is focused now, they could have made arrangements for this eventuality.
Absolutely, and that brings a great point on Baxter. As I say in my briefing, I agree on almost everything that is said regarding res judicata by opposing counsel. In the Baxter case, the critical thing there is the divorce decree at issue grants a half of all right, title, and interest, and then they do their formula, to the gross U.S. Army retirement and or disability benefits and or VA disability benefits. Now, we could argue that, wait a minute, the court didn't have authority to divide VA disability benefits, and they don't under Texas law, but that wasn't challenged at the time. So under res judicata, that's an incorrect judgment, but you can't come back later and collaterally attack it. But that's not what we're doing here. What we're doing here is we had a clarification request, and so we're just trying to determine what does it mean when a court divides all, excuse me, the phrase is so important, all Army retirement pay or military retirement pay. That's the narrow issue we're addressing. And back in 1976, it doesn't say anything about VA disability benefits. So we have to decide, and counsel argues about terms of art, well, this all means gross pay or this means total pay. It doesn't say that. And I don't see anything in the cases that I've read that say when this term is used, it really means this. And so if you're a trial court trying to decide how to clarify this order if necessary, but I can't alter it, I can't modify it, I can't change it. So what I'm trying to do is divine what did the court divide? What property was divided back in 1976? Back in 1976, the law in Texas was VA disability benefits could not be divided. So in light of that law, I think it would be completely improper 30 years later to say, well, wait a minute, the court must have implicitly divided VA disability benefits when it wrote all Army retirement pay or military retirement pay. Because then we're going to have to implicitly find that the court violated the law back then.
Is there a trend among other states as to where they've gone on this?
No, is the honest answer. And you can look at all of the states, and there is a pretty good ALR out there. I can get the site if you'd be interested in it. And courts are going everywhere. And the reason more often than not that the courts are going everywhere is when they're trying to figure out what do you do about these former spouses that money is disappearing from. How do we protect them or whatever vested interests they might have? It all comes down to equitable principles.
So there is no, you'd say the cases are everywhere?
And when I say everywhere,
because you'd have to agree that uniformity on this issue among the states would be something to strive for.
Absolutely. And that may be what is at issue in the forthcoming legislation that council addressed. You know, the Congress may have decided, wait a minute, we need to clean this up. But as far as right now, there isn't, I could not divine any trend other than where I did see any sort of trend were in cases that long recognized alimony, and so these payments were treated as alimony rather than property division. And unfortunately, that can't apply to Texas because we didn't have alimony for so long. So while we might look at some of the equitable discussion in there and it might be helpful, ultimately it doesn't really resolve it because it's a fundamentally different issue. Here, what we're stuck with trying to figure out is what property was divided. And our trial court can't alter that. That's what res judicata prohibits. We can't alter whatever property was divided. So we get back to all retirement, Army retirement pay or military retirement pay, and ultimately we're stuck with, is that property? Does that include VA benefits? And what we've got is Justice Pope's decision in Burson, which says that's not even property, so it can't be divided. And I think,
counsel, in responding to the initial question on rebuttal about equities, you drew a distinction between, on some occasions, justice and the law. Mm. Are there instances when you think justice should trump the law?
Well, I think that's what...
Obviously, we hope almost all the time they completely overlap.
Sure,
sometimes the equities might suggest something different than the law.
Can you
think of a situation involving parties like this where you, if you were the judge, would say justice should trump the law as to these types of benefits? A lady that's just so bad off or so elderly or lives in a shoe, pick a circumstance.
I think the way I would answer that, and I'm not being cagey and I'll be glad to follow up and get more specific, is that's why we have equitable powers in courts. Because I think that's where the rule of law, everyone recognizes the black letter of law. Sometimes it leads to a harsh result. Sometimes we just have to accept that. In one case, we'll accept a harsh result because this rule of law is going to be better for the vast majority of situations. And we all know that that happens. But equitable powers permit courts to come forward and try to remedy them when they see fit. Now, in a situation like this, the problem with that, and I'm not saying the problem of applying that because I think that's appropriate, but here we don't have a record to consider that. I would be doing my client a disservice to try and argue the equity because I don't know the whole situation. I don't know his former wife's situation. This record is devoid of all of that. We know that she's getting less money than she once did. We also know that my client is 100% disabled and presumably requires benefits to help him cope with that.
When did it become permissible to substitute VA disability pay for retirement pay?
For him in specific or the legislation?
No, generally.
And opposing counsel is much more of an expert on this. I think that the VA disability stuff and the required waiver is longstanding. I think that goes back
prior to 76?
Yeah, I think that goes back in the maybe prior to the 70s. Because I think the Ramsey case, which was 72, you know, and if counsel can answer that, I'm glad to cede a second of time to him on that. But because I think it's I think it's a good issue. But what we know is he is required to waive it. And I think to the extent, you know, the equity, how to do that, I think the proper thing would be decide, and I'm out of time, so I'm just going to finish this point for you. I think we have to resolve this point. I don't think the trial court altered the decree in clarifying that it didn't include VA disabilities. Whether there is something else that could properly be done, I think that goes back to the trial court. And then maybe we're back up here in a year arguing whether that was the proper thing. But we'll have a factual record then. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. This clause is submitted, and that concludes the arguments for this morning, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.